Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA podcast presented by B-Ball Breakdown. I'm Brian Toporek, and joining me, as always, are Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, guys?
Doing well, Bri. How about you?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Well, as you might expect, I am jubilant. I am joyful. I am just ecstatic because my Philadelphia Sixers won the lottery! 3 years. 3 years, 199 regular season losses, having to watch Jahlil Okafor play basketball for 82 games. It was all worth it, because now the Sixers are number one. They have a choice between Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram. The rest of the lottery held to form. Lakers were two, Celtics were three. No major surprises. Guys, I honestly did not spend that much time on the Simmons versus Ingram debate before the lottery because I wanted to just get a top two pick before worrying about it. So I want to hear from both of you. If you were the Sixers, who would you choose at this very moment?
Well, first of all, I'm surprised you didn't go on and on for about 30 minutes. I was about ready to go make a drink and ask Sarah if she wanted one.
Oh, like, it's coming. Yeah. It's coming.
Yeah, it's coming. All right, fine. Just give me a heads up. I'm thinking Ingram. I like Brandon Ingram. That being said, I don't think you can go wrong with either. We should just let people know before we shot this podcast, we were actually Brian and I were doing a guest spot on the Almighty Prophet podcast. Yes. And in there we're talking about sort of the same lines in regards to Ingram versus Simmons, and you made the point that because Philly is a team in this rebuilding process, it doesn't really matter that you need to build around Ben Simmons because you're ready to do that. It's like if for any other team they might not be willing to like re-up their whole entire roster and just do something else just to satisfy Ben Simmons. But you're in that exact position to actually get a guy in there whom you can build around. So that's why he's actually a pretty good pick for you if you choose to go that way. So I kind of like him from Philly, but I still like Ingram a little bit more.
Sarah, what about you? Do you have any perspective on this?
Yeah, you know, I was telling Morten earlier, we have to preface it by saying, you know, I've just been trying to catch up on YouTube videos. I do not watch a lot of college ball, so no one would want me to make this decision for their team. But I've gone back and forth all morning.
Yeah,
I'm kind of with Morten that I want to lean towards the better shooter, but Simmons also has so many things that you can't teach. You know, his passing really impresses me. Obviously, he's got a great body. He's got a great handle. He's got the right size, the right build. Man, it's so hard. I guess it would depend if they believe that they can teach him to shoot. Obviously, Kawhi learned how to shoot. But he also, beyond having a great teacher, he had that drive to put in all of the time to become a really good shooter. So that would be my biggest question if I'm the Sixers. Do we think we can teach him how to shoot? But I don't know. I think I'm leaning towards Ingram as well. It might be the bias that, small forward turned our franchise around. That might be it. Plus, y'all have a lot of bigs, so you might want to go Ingram.
Right. If Ben Simmons is going to be Kawhi Leonard, you know, Brian should be having a larger smile on his face right now.
Well, it's funny you guys bring that up because ESPN's David Thorpe has a really good column today about Ben Simmons, and he even said the knock on Simmons as a shooter is somewhat overrated. Let's not forget that another do-it-all type of NBA star was not a good shooter in college. In two seasons, Kawhi Leonard shot 20.5% and 29.1% from three, yet is a career 39% shooter in the NBA. So,
true. That's not a rule, though. That's one of the exceptions.
I was going to say, Kawhi's a rare bird, but it's possible.
And I'm still scarred from the Michael Carter Williams era. Like, I am drafting someone who can't shoot and being like, all right, that's your one swing skill. Like, if you could do that, you'll be a superstar. That does worry me a little bit, having gone through the MCW experiment. That said, right now, this is subject to change at least like 500 times between now and draft night.
Oh, at a minimum.
Oh, yeah. But right now, I am pretty firmly Team Simmons. I mean, I totally get what you guys are saying about Ingram being the better shooter. It's, like, easier to see him working in the modern NBA. I just can't overlook how good of a passer Ben Simmons is. And I see the way that, you know, people have compared him. Brett Brown even brought up LeBron James and Magic Johnson as comparisons to him in terms of his passing.
Don't do that,
right,
Brett.
Right. And he was like, he's not that like, he's not guaranteed to be a top 15 all-time player, obviously. But having a big guy who can pass like that just contorts defenses in such weird ways, as we're seeing in Milwaukee with Giannis. You know, Giannis also can't shoot worth a lick, but, like, look at what he did. Like, look at how he transformed Milwaukee's really disappointing season once they put him at the point guard. So, Morton, you said it. Like, the Sixers are at a point right now where they don't have – they have a bunch of lottery picks. They have Nerlens Noel. They have Jahlil Okafor. They have Dario Saric coming over, presumably this summer. Joel Embiid is set to make his debut this fall. Embiid's the only guy who I'm at least semi-confident, as long as he stays healthy, is a franchise building block. Like, the other guys, I'm not planning my future around Jahlil Okafor. Like, if anything, I think
you only try to trade him every podcast, so
I really do. But this time it's for real, because, like, Simmons and Okafor cannot work together. Like, they are just so, they're oil and water on both ends of the floor. Like, Okafor and Noel even struggle together, but Simmons, like, you need the ball in his hands as a point forward. You can't, you're not going to waste his talent by having, like, a low post kind of plotting, struggling on defense, especially in pick and rolls. Like, you can't do that. Like, Simmons and Noel would work fine together. Simmons and Embiid, I think, could be fantastic together. Simmons and Okafor would be terrible. And so, part of the reason I'm Team Simmons, admittedly, is because I think it just forces your hand, and I think you have to trade Okafor. But
so you're building your draft choice on, indirectly, the trading of Jahlil Okafor.
Yes. That,
so you're choosing your franchise player based on the merits that you want to trade Jahlil Okafor.
In part, yes.
That's crazy. Yeah,
I know. No, right. I'll
set your mind at ease, though.
Okay.
Because here's the thing about Ben Simmons that goes heavily overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that players in college, they are not as inclined to get a high volume of free throw attempts as NBA players.
Yeah.
All right. Ben Simmons averaged 9 free throw attempts per game in college as a freshman.
That's insane.
Meaning he got the calls, right? Because he forced the ref's hand. He knows how to get to the line, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's a terrific skill in its own right, and it could help offset the maybe lack of shooting.
Yeah.
So he could still remain an efficient scorer by getting to the line. He may not be able to stretch, but if he can get to the line like 8-9 times a game and hit it at those 67, 68, maybe even 70%, then he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are definitely some arguments to be made for Simmons. And maybe the biggest argument here is you can't really go wrong with either, can you?
Right.
Because if you go, with Ingram, like, just hold on to your hats for this one. Joel Embiid at center, Dario Saric at the 4,
yep,
and then Brandon Ingram at the 3. That's a hell of a front line. And that's a jumpy one. That's a lengthy one. It's one that can shoot, penetrate, pass. Not pass as well as any Ben Simmons lineup, but that's still very, very good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you nailed it. Like, you can't – either one of these guys is going to be great. I think you can't really go wrong. Like, maybe one turns out to be a true
better
franchise.
Yeah,
yeah, right. But either way, you're going to get a really good player at the top of this draft. I think working also in Simmons' favor is the fact the Sixers – not only don't have an established point guard, but don't have a point guard at all. Because Ish Smith is a free agent.
Yeah.
And TJ McConnell is the only other one really left on the roster. So it's not
That's
like,
why you're going to draft Chris Dunn.
Well,
at number one. We need basketball players.
No. We'll get there. but Simmons, it works in his favor that he's not displacing, like, You know, you're not putting him on a roster with Russell Westbrook or with Chris Paul or with Kyrie. Like, he can be the primary ball handler, playmaker, whatever, from day one. And that enables you to go out either later in the draft or in free agency and target some non-conventional point guards, some guys who don't necessarily need to have the ball in their hands. They're more like 3-and-D guys, but they're at the point.
So, sort of like prime Derek Fisher next to Kobe.
Yeah, yeah.
Like this, the spot-up point guard.
Right, or like Patrick Beverley if he could shoot a little better.
Yeah, but like all
that, that just enables your... You have to build around Simmons, whereas Ingram can just... You said it more, and like, you can just picture him sliding in more easily. But I think the Sixers are at the point where they can... They can still build around this guy. And I'd much rather see them build their identity around Ben Simmons than I would Jahlil Okafor. So, again, that's going to change, guaranteed, at least 50 times between the draft. Like, I've already wavered and gone back to Ingram a little bit. But one other thing I do want to bring up is that... So, one of the big concerns about Simmons is, you know, his perceived attitude problems. Or, like, his body language wasn't great. He... quote unquote quit on his LSU team, which was a trash team. actually, 2 points on that. One, Derek Bodner, who writes for Philly Mag, he does some draft stuff for USA Today. He's brought it up that LSU lost their best shooter to an injury early in the year. So that LSU team might not have been as garbage. That guy didn't get hurt, and Simmons might have even seen a better Ben Simmons with a shooter next to him. Mm.
Yeah.
The bigger point I want to make, though, is Brett Brown has known Ben Simmons' father for decades. Like, he coached Simmons' dad while he was the coach of the Melbourne Tigers. So he says he's known Ben Simmons since birth. Like, if any organization is going to be able to vet the concerns, the off-court concerns about Ben Simmons, it is the Sixers, thanks to Brett Brown. We also, I believe our director of sports science or whatever fancy title he has, David T. Martin, he came over from the Australian Institute of Sport. I don't know how much he's worked with Ben Simmons, if at all, but I just think having people who are familiar with Australian culture would help ease the acclimation from college to the NBA. Because it's, you know, it's not easy coming over halfway across the world, leaving your family to go play professional basketball. So I think having Brown, having Martin, that really gives me a sense of comfort that I wouldn't necessarily otherwise have.
My God, man, your eyes are like so large right now. You are sparkling. You're glowing.
I really am.
You look like a pregnant woman in her third trimester right now. You're beautiful right now, Brian.
I'm gonna end this by noting this is how David Thorpe ended his Ben Simmons ceiling column. Quote, that puts his ceiling as a perennial all-star, a max salary player, and if he learns how to be a better primary scorer, a recurrent MVP candidate. So there's that. That guy could be on my team in a month, so you're damn right I'm glowing. It's about time.
This is almost cute. Yeah. No, you know what? Scratch that. This is cute.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Thank
you.
It is funny that you mentioned how large his eyes were, because I was going to say, he looks like, what are those cartoons with the giant, like, doe puppy eyes? That's exactly what he looks like right now.
The Asian cartoons. Yeah, the Japanese cartoon. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We need a screenshot.
I'm guilty as charged. All right.
You haven't stopped smiling in the 4 hours that we've talked since prior to shooting. So that's fantastic.
It's not going to get used to this. This is the next month until I find out we traded it for as you said, Chris Dunn. We really heated up on Chris Dunn. Yeah.
That's not going to happen though because of Brett Brown. I think Simmons is going to be the selection for Philly because of the connection. I still think Ingram is the guy who carries more potential in terms of his raw scoring ability. Like, if he becomes... I don't think he's Kevin Durant. Let me just start out by saying that. I don't think he's Kevin Durant. But if he one day was to become that sort of player, like, he's young. Yeah. He could theoretically reach that level.
A year younger than Ben Simmons, which is a working in his favor.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that would be, at least be very interesting. But yeah, I agree. I think Ben Simmons is going to be selected first, and that means the Lakers, of all teams, are going to get one hell of a player at number two.
Yeah.
I think there was some rumblings about Simmons maybe wanting to force his way to Los Angeles, but I'm thinking with Brett Brown there,
right,
that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I think that was, I want to say, Nick De Podesta from The Vertical had that report earlier in the week. Before the lottery happened, he had a report come out that said Simmons was waiting to finalize his shoe deal until after the lottery. He wanted to go to LA because he thought it would force, I think it was Nike's hand, to make them raise their price a little bit. I think that's overblown. I mean, I think, yeah, as you said, like, maybe he just didn't want to go to, like, Phoenix or Boston or somewhere, but because he's got the relationship with Brett Brown, I think, I don't know, what kid's going to turn down being the number one overall pick because he wants a little more money on his shoe deal? Like, he's going to make most of that difference up on his contract itself, so I'm not...
Yeah, and the difference was $2.5 million, right?
Yeah,
it was like $10 million from Adidas and $7.5 million from Nike, and he wanted like to up the Nike thing. Just an aside, right? Here's a kid who is 19 years old, and he's sort of waffling at an offer for $7.5 million. That just makes me upset. I understand the marketability and all that, but oh man, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I would never have that problem.
Yeah, yeah. I would be very pleased to have the problem where $7.5 million isn't enough. Martin, I think you touched on it. The Lakers, whoever, especially if the Sixers take Simmons number one, and for what it's worth, Bleacher Report's Kevin Ding had a report the day after the lottery saying they were leaning heavily towards Simmons at one, which would be Ingram at two. The Lakers would be really fun with Russell, Clarkson, Ingram, and Julius Randle. And then Luke Walton is the coach. Like, how much more fun are they going to be than whatever we were forced to watch this past year?
Oh, so fun. And here's the thing. If they get Ingram, right? You know what? Scratch that. Regardless of who they get, if it's Simmons or Ingram, right now they're actually a more attractive free agent destination.
For sure.
Had they landed at three and chosen, like, Dragan Bender or Jaylen Brown or whoever,
that
would have been less attractive. But right now... they have a chance at being very active in free agency. They're not going to get Kevin Durant. They're not going to get, like, Mike Conley. But they could potentially get, like, a youngster, maybe Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean...
I do wonder... there were reports that DeMar DeRozan wanted to go there. I wonder how Ingram affects that. Because they play the same position, right?
Like, don't do it, LA, because, you know, I mean, yeah, I like the 23 points a game as well, but I don't like the lack of shooting.
Yeah.
Don't do it, but yeah.
Or maybe,
of course they're going
to
do it.
Yeah, maybe they sign DeMar for their starting two and move Clarkson to the bench. I mean, I guess I don't totally hate that, but I don't know.
And then you trade Jahlil Okafor for Jordan Clarkson.
Well, now that we get to the trade Jahlil Okafor section of the podcast, I am...
Again?
Yeah. Oh, always. Always. I think you brought it up. The top two clear winners, because you get Simmons or Ingram. The Celtics, though, they fall to three. And aside from Dragan Bender, the other top three prospects in that range, Buddy Hield, Chris Dunn, and Jamal Murray, are all guards. Boston's pretty set in that regard when it comes to Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart. They picked up, you know, James Young, RJ Hunter, Terry Rozier. Like, they have a buttload of young guards, so they don't really need guards. If they're not in love with Bender, what do you think they do?
Well, I live by the theory that you never draft for need, though.
Okay.
You need to get the best player available, and then you make follow-up moves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jamal Murray is able to separate himself significantly from RJ Hunter, Terry Rozier, James Young. I mean, those guys are decent prospects.
For sure.
But I don't think they're Jamal Murray prospects. So if they have a chance for him, I would go with him. But preferably, I would want Boston to trade the pick. I think they need to cash in. I wrote an article about this on... today's Fast Break a couple of weeks back. I think Boston needs to go all in this summer. They need to cash their chips and they need to get established players in there. Like I've mentioned both Boogie, Jimmy Butler, like guys like that. they need to at least try to get those guys. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work out, which is a realistic scenario, because yeah, like we spoke about Dave Yeager being the coach of Sacramento. He's like the one coach who could reach Boogie.
Right.
And like, who represented the Bulls at the draft lottery?
Yeah.
Like Jimmy Butler. Okay, that kind of shows a little bit. And the Bulls are maybe even considering hiring one of his trainers to be their new trainer. So it seems like they're going in the Jimmy Butler route, which is it's fine, but they're not going to go anywhere unless they do something else. And that's why he would have made sense in Boston, because you could have gotten a high pick as well as their 16th pick, and then seen what turned up there. But yeah.
Yes. So I'm holding out hope. Right around the trade deadline, it was rumored that the Celtics offered that Nets pick for Okafor. So now that it's at 3, and now that they don't have a very obvious choice, I'm hoping those discussions get rekindled, to say the least. I'm going to throw a couple trades out there. I want you guys to tell me if you do it or not. So first, Sarah, Okafor for 3, straight up, yes or no?
For you, obviously, but but I'm thinking no. For Boston, that's what you're saying?
Yeah, for both sides, yeah.
Nah, wow. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Definitely on board with that, Sarah.
Uh-oh.
Yikes.
I think us Sixers fans have been wildly overvaluing Jahlil Okafor then, because a lot of us have been saying, like, gun to my head, if Danny Ainge comes to Brian Colangelo and says, this is my one and only offer, we do the pick straight up, like, I probably say yes, and then I take Jamal Murray. But, like, ideally, I try to extract a little sweetener in there. So either, like, throw in the number 24 pick and have them throw in number 16, or...
Oh, Brian, you're delusional, little bastard. What happened?
Or get, like, number... Well, you do Okafor and 24 for, like, 3 and Avery Bradley, that kind of thing.
Dude, don't get greedy. What the hell?
Yeah,
no.
Okay, we... This thought experiment ended. I'm not smiling anymore because
number one went to his head.
Yeah,
it really did. Okay, Sixers fan out there, especially those who communicate with Brian, like no, Jahlil Okafor is a weak rebounder. He's a non-defender. He can't shoot. Fair enough. He's got a nice post game. He's got some potential, but give me a break though.
Like
squeezing out more than number 3 for him. No.
If he was in this draft class, where do you think he goes?
That's a tough one because, you know, if then he would have been a sophomore, and you know how college prospects tend to be evaluated after the second year.
Yeah.
You focus more on their faults than their strengths.
Right.
So he would probably be like the 4th or 5th pick. Like I think he could even drop a little bit further.
I think he would clearly be number 3.
And especially, even with the lack of defense, though?
Yeah, because, see, I mean, I've been as guilty as anyone as overblowing this. He's not terrible as a one-on-one post defender. It's just in pick and rolls. Which
okay,
is, like,
that's fair.
A huge
yeah,
problem.
That's fair.
Like, as Kanter has proven, like, that is an enormous problem that limits your ceiling significantly. But, like, the dude averaged, what, 17-7 as a rookie? On a team with, like, now no point guard for half the year, like you can't,
and on a team that won 10 games,
right? Yeah, but like I think he would have more value not in Philly. Like he could still be a very good NBA player, and especially given Boston's dearth of big men.
I agree with you.
You know, they have Sullinger's restricted this summer, Tyler Zeller's restricted this summer, Amir Johnson is not guaranteed. So the only guaranteed big they have, I think, is Kelly Olynyk. So, you know, they need to address the front court. It just seems like a logical place, but you guys have really brought me down, because Sixers Twitter since Tuesday has just been all... We've been throwing hypothetical Celtics scenarios out there.
I think one of the things that's from my end, attached to this is also the potential, like, off-court issues.
Okay. Yeah,
like the whole shebang there, that was pretty concerning.
Oh,
like,
and that fight was in Boston, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah,
But I get what you're saying. Boston does need bigs,
right?
and they're not guaranteed anyone in free agency, but yeah, no. You know, if they get desperate and if they don't like Dragon Bender, then yeah, I could see them overpaying it, but I would still consider it an overpay.
Yeah, I really would.
I mean, Jahlil, I like his offensive game. Don't get me wrong. I'm hating on him a little bit too much. That I admit, but his rebounding struggles are real, especially for a guy who's 6'11", 270.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't rebound outside his area. I think correct me if I'm wrong, but like he's not really good at contested rebounding as well.
Yeah.
I think I saw some numbers. Yeah.
He's just slow. He's like really slow-footed.
Exactly, which leads into the pick and roll defensive issues, and the fact that he can't shoot is another problem. And in this new era where shooting is a necessity, I find it worrisome. But hell, you know what? You might get lucky. Let me ask you this though: let's say Danny Ainge does do the trade.
Yeah.
Who do you take at three?
I think I do Jamal Murray. Well, it depends. I mean, if you take Ingram number one, you probably take Chris Dunn because you need a point guard. But Chris Dunn and Ben Simmons don't seem to work well together. So I think you do Simmons, Murray, or you do Ingram.
Yeah. Dunn. Yeah, definitely Murray with Simmons.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I wouldn't take Dunn there. Yeah. Simply, he's not a shooter.
Right.
Well, you know, he shot 37% last year, but that was college. Yeah, I would agree with that pairing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we will have plenty more Sixers draft discussion in the weeks to come, hopefully.
Wait, I have one question, though.
Okay.
Bulls call you up.
No.
Butler for first.
No.
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 No. Okay.
No. Because I mean, I love Jimmy, but you've said it. Like, he's not on the timeline of a developmental team.
Yeah.
So
no, I had a feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. If they fell to three and they were like three for Jimmy straight up, I would. If they, I mean, they couldn't fall past four, but if they like somehow trade down and offered Okafor and like number eight for Jimmy, I would say yes. But no, not number one. I think Ben Simmons, I mean, you hope that he can become as impactful as a player as Jimmy Butler, but I mean, I would think his ceiling is just as high, if not higher. So,
do you then do it if you're number two, like Los Angeles? Do you do that trade if you're LA, like number two for Butler? Because and here you have to remember, like in LA, they are all about the stars.
Yeah, I mean, if Simmons goes one, you're basically trading Butler for Ingram. And aren't you just hoping that Ingram becomes what Butler is? So
I'm hoping that he becomes better than that, but what I'm really buying is time.
Yeah. Yeah, I would probably do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think LA would, because I think they're going to want to hype the team as like this young team with, you know, Ingram and Russell and Clarkson and Randall. But I could also see, well, no, now Jimmy is Hollywood as hell, so maybe he would like that.
He is Hollywood as hell, and here's the thing. Los Angeles, they are interested in being a free agent player in the summer. So who helps more in that regard, Jimmy or Brandon Ingram?
Yeah, Jimmy definitely would. Then you can get like Hassan Whiteside, and you've got a pretty damn good starting five.
That's exactly. So that's why I'm kind of thinking that could be a possible scenario out there. Then you would have Whiteside, Randall, Jimmy, Clarkson, and Russell.
Yeah, with Nick Young.
That's not bad.
Nick Young is your sixth man.
Oh. Yeah.
All right, so we will talk a lot more draft in the weeks to come. We're going to have James Hollis, also known as Snotty Drippin, on the podcast soon, so we will throw some hypothetical Celtics trades at him. Morton and I will compete for his number three pick. In the meantime, let's turn our attention to the Western Conference Finals, which are tied at one game apiece. OKC took game one before the Warriors came roaring back and just wiped the floor with them in game two. I wrote a piece at bballbreakdown.com about Steven Adams just being he's a freak of nature, man. He is so good. I mean, Sarah can vouch for this, having watched him annihilate her Spurs.
Yep.
I mean, I think he got hurt in game two, but he came back. Festus Ezeli basically sat on his back coming down from a rebound. But You gotta hope he's healthy for the remainder of the series. I do have some concerns, and I want to hear what you guys have to think about OKC's other big men and how they're matching up against the Warriors. Sarah, let's start with you.
I was just thinking when you had to bring that back up. I told you guys it didn't hurt, but I went off into space for a minute there. I was thinking Steven Adams is the first guy to finally make Tim Duncan look old.
Yeah.
And I really did not enjoy that. But anyway. I'm really back. Sorry. I'm back from the dark side. It's okay. Sorry. Okay, you asked about their other big guys. Well, we've been concerned about that all playoffs long. Somehow the Spurs didn't... Anyway. Yeah, the Spurs weren't able to exploit that, but the Warriors will be able to. I'm to the point where I'm going to give Oklahoma some credit now. I don't think they're going to go away, and I'll be very disappointed if they go down without a fight here, but we all picked the Warriors, right? Morton, yep, picked them to sweep.
Sure did.
Brian, you picked them in five. I picked them in six. So
Damn you, Brian.
Being nice. Yeah. So this is what we expected. It's for the Warriors to get rolling, and I think they're going to continue to roll. But
yeah.
We'll see.
Morton, what about you?
Oh, they looked real good in game two.
Yeah.
They looked real good. In regards to the bigs, I mean, I don't think we need to rehash it because we know what Enes Kanter can and can't do. Mm-hmm. We know Steven Adams is really evolving right now. He's having a breakout playoff performance, and next year he's going to be a heavy topic among the league.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, when you have Draymond, then you just have like this key that unlocks everything. I have tremendous faith in Draymond Green and the fact that he can provide so many different looks for Oklahoma City. Like, he can initiate the offense from on top of the key, from the post. He can defend his ass off. He rebounds. He pushes the ball. He shoots. I mean, come on. Like, when he's on, he's on. And that's not even mentioning Steph.
Yeah.
Like, when Steph just went eight the other night, like, what can you do outside of just stand there and go, well, game over, I guess. I mean, what do you do as the opponent? Like, how do you respond to, like, three triples being canned down your throat and then be a follow-up by Dre, who makes, like, a defensive stop and then pushes the ball, passes it up to a dunk? Like, what do you do?
Yeah.
What do you do?
I mean, that's the thing with the Warriors, is that you can play them so well and, like, you can play them tight, and then all it takes is, like, one momentary lapse in focus and they're up 10 points. Like, OKC was close in the first half. Like, I think with 2 minutes left, they had, what, a 47-46 lead? Something like that? And then the Warriors went on a late run and then kind of just carried that momentum over into the third. Yeah, I mean, it's... OKC just has to be so defensively sound for all 48 minutes. And they proved capable of that in Game 1. But when Adams got banged up in Game 2, it did change the tenor of those matchups just enough to give Golden State the advantage. So that's luckily there's a 3-day break between games 2 and 3. Game 2 was Wednesday, right? And then game 3 is not till Sunday. So he's got a little more time than usual to get right again. But I just have to hope for OKC's sake that he is healthy because, yeah, I mean, you know, they really did not take advantage of Kanter enough in game one, and it looked like Steve Kerr spent 2 days of film just pointing out, hey guys, when Enes Kanter's on the floor, go at him every single time. Like, every single time. Make him unplayable. And the same thing happened with Andre Robertson on offense. Like, they put Dre on Robertson, and they're just letting him cheat off to like really stifle any sort of attack in the paint. So Golden State made some great adjustments in game two. I'm interested to see what OKC does to respond in game three. I mean, Russ was not great in game two.
Oh, that was bad Russ.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll have to see what happens there. Do you guys want to give an updated prediction on the series? Now that Warriors in four is not quite possible.
I want to I want to, but before I do that, I just want to ask Sarah something here, because in 2014 in the NBA Finals, when the Spurs during the last three games just dominated Miami, I noticed a pattern, which was they just had to make like one bang bang play to get going. They didn't need, like, Oklahoma City needs two or three to really get going, and then they just put the lid off. Like, San Antonio only needed one to spur a run, pun intended. And it seems like Golden State is echoing that right now. It seems like they only need, like, one high-profile three-pointer from Steph, and then they're off to the races. Do you see any similarities in those two? Or am I overrating the Dubs a little bit, comparing them to the great 2014 performance of the Spurs?
No, definitely not. I mean, I think, who's it, Jesse from B-Ball Breakdown, he often uses the, like, a Pokemon comparison. And he talks about, like, the stages of evolution. And so I've thought for a while, like, for the Dubs, like, you would start out with the 7 seconds or less Suns, and then you evolve into the 2014 Spurs. And now your highest form is these Warriors. I think that it's exactly, they move the ball, and like you said, that's how they play. It takes a second. I think Brian mentioned he went to walk his dog, like it was a close game, and he comes back, and the Warriors just blew the doors off. Yeah. That's what they do. It happens quickly, and you're done. Like you said, a Steph 3 or Draymond makes a nice pass, or Iguodala throws this crazy layup, you know, off the glass. Yeah, that's all they need, and then they're off. And good luck trying to slow it down.
It's interesting to see that they've evolved to this place where they are basically unstoppable when they hit their strides, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think they are going to keep winning. So I don't foresee... I'm going to stick... to, well, at least to the closest thing I can get, I'm gonna say Dubs in five.
Ooh.
I'm you know what, screw it, I'm gonna stick with it all the way through. If Oklahoma City takes another game, I'm gonna say that's the final one. I believe this Warriors team is just capable of running off so many wild plays that they're gonna at some point find a rhythm that's downright dominant. I think they're gonna carry it into the finals against the Cavs. And I think they're going to kick their butts, even though I like the Cavs right now.
Sarah, what about you? Sticking with Warriors in six?
Yeah, I'm going to just stay Warriors in six.
I like it. Yeah. I want to stay Warriors in five.
No, don't leave the boat, Brian, because I swear to God, I'll pull you down with me, dude.
I'll stick with it. I was confident in the lottery. I'm confident here. Warriors in five.
That was fear speaking right there.
It totally was. Martin, as you mentioned, whoever comes out of this series has a date with the Cavaliers in the NBA Finals. And I can say that confidently, even though we're only two games through the Eastern Conference Finals, because the Cavs have just been annihilating the Raptors. It's not even a series. Like, I would ask what the Raptors could do to adjust and maybe turn it into a series, but...
I actually have an answer.
Do you? For that. Okay. Okay. All yours.
Kyle Lowry has to physically become Stephen Curry.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's like number one.
Right.
Yeah. Jonas Valanciunas has to become prime Hakeem.
Yep. At first, yep. He has to get back on the floor and then become. Yeah.
And then become prime Hakeem. Right. And DeMar DeRozan has to become a 45% three-point shooter.
Oh,
like overnight.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So barring all of those things.
yeah. Outside of that, no, they're screwed.
Yeah.
They're screwed.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Sorry, Raptors. It's not fun being killed all over again.
No.
Should have.
Yeah. I was going to say take a trip to Lourdes. Yeah. Visit the grotto. Dip yourselves in the water. It could work.
That's true. Yeah. We'll do our official eulogy of the Raptors next time around, because I'm pretty confident they will be done by then.
Just one final note on the Raptors, right?
Yeah.
Kyle Lowry apparently invited Tyronn Lue over to watch the Dubs Thunder game. Like, okay, I'm not one of those guys who complain and bitch every single day about the league being too buddy-buddy, but this,
yeah,
this is a clear case of the league, or not the league, but of a situation that is just way too buddy-buddy.
Yeah.
What the hell are you doing, Kyle? Inviting the opposing coach to, like, for a game date? Like, what are you doing, Kyle?
That was weird. That was a weird story. And then him taking himself off of the bench at the end of the first half yesterday, like going back to the locker room with 2 minutes left, the Cavs go on, I think it was a 16-2 run, 12-2 of which came with him in the locker room.
And he needed to decompress. Yeah, like, what is up with Kyle right now?
It's been a weird Kyle Lowry series, but he has been really, I mean, he's been so hot and cold these playoffs, and we could reasonably expect him to be cold in this series, but he's living up to those expectations. I do want to give a quick shout out to CBS Sports' Ken Berger. He had a really interesting column on the impact that Tyronn Lue has had. Basically, it just said David Blatt, you know, they were 30-11 under him, but they weren't enjoying the way they were playing, and Blatt wasn't necessarily holding LeBron James accountable. And so Berger relayed an anecdote where at one point in a huddle, LeBron was trying to take over the huddle, and Lou basically just said, "Shut the F up, LeBron. Like, I'm the coach." So I props to Tyronn Lue, because I mean,
oh, it only took someone 13 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Coach Spo put him in line for a little bit too.
All right, you know, that's fair. Yeah. You know, then 9 years, because during LeBron's first stint in Cleveland, he just had carte blanche.
Yeah, like, oh, for sure.
He could do whatever he wanted, and Mike Brown didn't say anything, and it was just, oh, LeBron's little own boy club there, right there. It was just horrible.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see someone step up in Cleveland and say, LeBron, shut yo something and sit down.
Yeah, so my question about the Cavs now, it's been circulating on Twitter the past couple days. They can only play the teams that they're given, right? Like, so we can't bash them for being 10-0. We can, you know, they could be 10-0 and be squeaking out games. Like, the fact that they're dominating to this extent, I think, is impressive regardless of the level of competition. Do you guys think they are favorites to win it all right now?
Like, Vegas odds, or
just in, like, if you had to pick a champion today?
Oh no, I have the Dubs. I still have the Dubs, but I mean, that's not taking anything away from Cleveland. They've been so impressive, and they have been playing leaps and bounds better than they did in the regular season. Mm-hmm. So I mean, yeah, people complain about bad competition, but that's just a load of crap. They're I mean, yeah, okay, it's not the best teams, but they're, as you said, they're doing what's expected of them with weak competition. They're blowing them out,
right?
Like, thoroughly. 25 threes in a playoff game, like, come on.
Yeah.
I mean that doesn't come by accident. I mean, they're playing great basketball. And you made a point on the podcast that we visited, the Almighty Prophet, that we had to throw out everything we know about last year's series between Cleveland and Golden State. I think you're right about that. Now, that doesn't change my prediction that the Dubs are going to win it again, but I do think it's going to be a whole new identity to that series.
Yeah. The point I made there was, you know, Kyrie played one game and got hurt in overtime. Kevin Love was out that whole series. Basically, J.R. Smith was your number two option. And if you're counting on J.R. Smith as your number two option, especially against Golden State, you are totally boned. But even still, Cleveland was up 2-1 in that series. So it wasn't as resounding a blowout as we seem to remember a year later. So, Sarah, what do you think if you had to pick today? Are you going to go Cavs, or do you go whoever comes out of the West?
See, that was the way that you phrased that there. Whoever comes out of the West. I mean, if it's the Thunder, it might be more of a toss-up for me. But if it's the Warriors, which we assume it will be, I think it probably will be, then yeah, I can't go against the defending champs at this point. I do agree that what the Cavs are doing is impressive. Especially the way they're shooting is impressive in an empty gym. So it doesn't really matter who they're playing. I think that they could maybe give the Warriors a better series, even though, like we said, last year's series went six games. But I don't know. I can't go against the Warriors at this point. It's just kind of sucks because I like East and West, but it isn't fair that, you know, they do get to just kind of coast right to the finals every year.
Yeah.
Them or whoever LeBron is playing for. But that's life.
This isn't a bitter Spurs fan, everyone.
Not at all. It's just, it's weird, right? I mean,
yeah. Don't worry. Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid will be there in a couple years to
start toughen it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Good, good.
But it's an interesting debate. Like, what if Oklahoma City met Cleveland? Like, let's just, okay, knock on wood, it's not going to happen. Let's just say Golden State had some injuries, right? Mm-hmm. Stuff happens, and OKC advances. Like, I am legitimately insecure about choosing any one of those two. Like, it could be either or.
I would go Cleveland.
Yeah, I wouldn't even. Yeah, I wouldn't even be surprised.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised to see them take it.
I wouldn't be confident in that pick, but I would definitely pick Cleveland.
You wouldn't be confident, but you would definitely pick them. Yeah. I like that. That's, well, like, that's good.
I wouldn't know how many games. I would probably say Cavs in seven, just off the top of my head.
Yeah, definitely a seven gamer.
Yeah, but
yeah,
it would be a good. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised either way. Like, if OKC won, I would not be shocked at all. OKC has put it together more so than they did during the regular season, and their inconsistency, especially in the fourth quarter, hasn't come back to haunt them. So, like, maybe that was just a lack of focus in the regular season, and now that they're in the playoffs, it's a non-issue. But I just can't shake the feeling that it's going to bite them in the ass at some point. They somehow dodged it against the Spurs, even though they were very lucky to do so at the end of game two. But I just, you know, seems like the Cavs are playing so well. It would be hard to pick against them, against a team that isn't the Warriors.
I just want to see Steven Adams and Tristan Thompson, like, club the hell out of each other for rebounds.
That would be really good. Yeah, that's the battle of the glass would be. That would be a big, I mean, that's a big advantage for both of those teams. So, like, being able to negate that for each of them would be, that would be so bloody. Someone would definitely get punched in the face in that series.
And you know Steven Adams would put LeBron on his ass at least twice.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So, we'll keep an eye out to see who meets the Cavs in the finals. Sorry again, Toronto fans, but you are...
other.
Yes, other. You are toast. We are going to switch over to our Where Amazing Happens segment because, once again, the coaching carousel is spinning. We've had two new hires, and it looks like Houston is honing in on their candidates, but we will touch on them once they actually hire someone. The big one...
The Knicks did something right!
Yeah, the big one was the Knicks hiring not Kurt Rambis. They actually hired...
What the hell? The Knicks did something logical!
It was shocking. They wound up hiring Jeff Hornacek, as Bleacher Report's Howard Beck was the first to report. What happened? I thought we were guaranteed to have years of Rambis.
I don't know. It's kind of fascinating. I want to do like a documentary about it, like one of those wild animals documentary. Look at the New York front office grazing in the distance. Like they are looking at their coaching candidates and this is a surprise. We've never seen this before. They are thinking logically. They are attacking from all the right angles.
Yeah.
And yeah, they ended up with a good coach.
Right.
Jeff Hornacek is the real deal. I know things went to hell in Phoenix, but I don't put that at his feet. He's a terrific offensive-minded guy. Yes, he needs defensive-minded assistant coaches, but so be it. I think he will run a hell of a system, and more importantly, this should mean the death of the triangle. That's not necessarily a good thing, but if for that specific roster, it is.
Yeah, in Beck's report, it says league sources indicate the Knicks under Hornacek will indeed move away from a pure triangle approach, but will retain triangle elements. As Coach Nick has talked about plenty. I mean, Golden State has elements of it. The Spurs have elements of it. Miami under LeBron had elements of it. The source told Beck that Jackson just wants a system of play so that when he walks away, when you look at the Knicks, you say, okay, I understand how the Knicks play basketball. Seems reasonable. Seems like a reasonable request.
Oh, that Phil Jackson hire went exactly like everyone thought it would go, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, to his credit, I mean, it really sounded like Rambis was the leading candidate for so long. And then, I mean, we've talked about it in past podcasts, that that would just be the absolute dumbest thing they could have done. So, props to the Knicks. Like, I agree that what happened in Phoenix isn't necessarily Hornacek, and in fact, like, that the team that he inherited was supposed to be awful, and then they surpassed expectations and won 48 games, and then they kind of reset the timeline based on their contention timeline, basically. So him falling short of expectations there was only because he so wildly surpassed them the first year. So
yeah. That's a fair point.
I'm definitely curious to see what he does, what this means for Carmelo. I think we could officially say Kristaps Porzingis at the three is no longer an issue. Thank God.
Yeah, that would have been awful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like, how is that even an idea?
I mean,
in 2016.
Playing 4-on-5 basketball is an idea floating around.
That's true.
And the Magic hired, after losing Scott Skiles, they hired a younger Scott Skiles.
I know. Yes, they hired Frank Vogel, the former Indiana Pacers head coach, who Larry Bird, whose contract he did not renew for reasons that are still unclear. So, Sarah, what do you think about the Magic under Frankie V?
It's exciting for them, especially since their last coach completely just jumped ship. I think, you know, they're getting a great coach out of it, so that's cool. I just hope that he isn't disenchanted the way that Scott was. He obviously was pretty upset, I guess we can surmise, from the trade, especially, that went down. So hopefully everyone can be happy with each other, and Vogel can do a good job down there.
Morton, how do you like the fit?
Love it. Love every single aspect of it. He's defensive-minded, which then continues the progress that Skiles made in making these guys, defensive-minded as well. So he can really build off what Skiles started as to... So there's a level of continuity, yep. I think the word is. I love Frank Vogel. I think he's a very clever defensive-minded coach. I think his offensive knowledge seemed to brighten a little bit as time went on. Mm-hmm. I don't think Indiana gave him the best players to work with.
Yeah.
And here in Orlando, you have Aaron Gordon, who I think can benefit greatly from Vogel.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing how that coach-player relationship is going to pan out.
Me too. That's the one I am most excited about.
Oh, for sure.
Because he...
For sure.
Skiles, even coming into his Orlando tenure, had the reputation of both not playing his younger guys all that much and being very inconsistent with his rotations. And he lived up to both of those things this year. It took them to trade Channing Frye before Aaron Gordon really got into the starting lineup, and trade Tobias Harris as well. And then even after Aaron Gordon got into the starting lineup, his minutes would just fluctuate so wildly. Like, he would play 36 minutes one night and then 16 the next. Yeah. And Skiles would say something like, well, he's just learning how to play a back-to-back in the NBA. Like, I really think that Vogel will be good. Because he is so defensively minded, he's going to see what Aaron Gordon brings to the table, and he's just going to say, screw it, you're playing 35 minutes a night. Like, I don't care what boneheaded young rookie, I mean, he's going to be a third-year player, but, like, just young player mistakes that you make, I'm just going to let you run.
And this is the year for Gordon to show what he can do. This is the third year.
Yeah.
It's always the third year, more or less. Like, you have some guys who can break out during the fourth, but this is the year for Aaron Gordon. I'm going to be, I mean, it's, yeah, his season almost just ended, but I'm going to go out on a limb and call him, like, one of the pre-favorites to most improved next year. I think he could be one of those guys.
That's a really good call. I really like that. Yeah, I think a lot's just going to depend on how they address their roster in the offseason. As we have made fun of so many times before, they traded Tobias Harris just to free up cap space. So you have to hope they do something productive with that. The one name that I'm now monitoring there, because Nick Vucevic is not exactly a defensive stopper at the five, but he is on a very reasonable contract. So you can either move him or move him to the bench and make him like your Enes Kanter. Dwight Howard, reportedly interested in coming back to the Magic, according to Rick Bucher. I forget what ESPN reporter confirmed that, but Orlando is on Howard's shortlist, apparently. Do you guys think he would make sense coming back there?
Only if he has a Sports Illustrated article and says, I'm coming home. He has to do it. To tell you the truth, when you started saying you were about to float a name, I was sure you were going to say Jahlil Okafor again. Because that's just always where I think you're going. But
if they want to trade Victor Oladipo for Jahlil Okafor, I am willing to have business.
Hey, actually, I don't know. I don't know if it would happen. But I think, hey, if they say that it's on Howard's shortlist, that actually is kind of interesting. It could be fun. Go back.
That defense.
That was his best part of his career.
Yeah.
Why not?
So he actually had an interview with ESPN's Jackie McMullen this week where he talked about a whole bunch of things that I thought were really interesting, but he talked about kind of the end of his Magic tenure. And he said the reason that he asked out is because he just didn't feel like they were committed to winning, which I thought was a little interesting because they had just been in the finals a couple years ago.
Yeah, that seems a bit weird.
Yeah, but under Vogel, I mean, the dude's a three-time Defensive Player of the Year. Vogel turned Roy Hibbert into a two-time All-Star, and I am a huge Roy Hibbert homer as a Georgetown alum, but, like, look at what happened to Roy Hibbert the last couple of years. Like, his system seems to maximize defensive players, defensive rim protectors. I wrote a thing for bballbreakdown.com. Two things about Dwight Howard, actually. One, just looking at what happened to him these past couple years and whether he's just, like, permanently on the decline. My big conclusion is that I think his demise has definitely been overrated. You know, offensively, he was the least productive he's been this year since, like, I think his sophomore season. But you have to keep in mind, like, since leaving Orlando, he's played with two of the most ball-dominant guards in the league. And Kobe Bryant and James Harden. And having watched some film of them trying to get the ball into the post, I mean, a lot of times they just ignore him, even though he had great post position. Or, I mean, Patrick Beverley just isn't a really strong passer or creative passer, I should say. So he, like, really struggled to run just a basic pick and roll with Howard. They only ran 91 plays with him as the role man this season, where he finished the possession as a role man, which is absurd.
Jeez.
Like, that's where he should be making his offensive contribution. So I did not have Orlando. I wrote another thing, kind of just surveying his free agent options, and it was like Atlanta if they lose Al Horford, or Miami if they lose Hassan Whiteside. Boston, Dallas, and Portland were my top three for various reasons that we can touch on. But Orlando, I thought, because they had Vucevic, that might preclude them from Howard. But now with Vogel, I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued. Martin, do you think, could you see Dwight back in Orlando?
Well, disregarding, you know, the so-called beef that went down a couple years ago and all the drama that would surround him going back to Orlando. Yeah, from a basketball perspective, absolutely. As you touched upon, his defensive influence would immediately help them, would immediately propel them to become a playoff team. And I think he would even take a lot of pressure off Aaron Gordon so he could develop in his own time frame, mm-hmm. which is huge for any young player.
Yep.
Whether he can participate offensively is a different story. I'm not even sure where, in which club he would thrive offensively at this point. Mm-hmm. Simply because teams aren't going away from the dump it down or big man pick and roll basketball. I mean, and that's kind of a shame, really, because when Dwight was on his game in Orlando, when he was really offensive minded as well as winning Defensive Player of the Year, he was so effective when he rolled to the rim.
Right.
Like, you couldn't stop him at all. And it seems to me that he still, at least at times, still have the same bounce.
Yeah.
And same quickness. So I've really been wondering why they didn't try to emulate that just a little bit more in Houston. But, you know, the answer is and always will be James Harden here. Mm-hmm. He likes to dribble. He likes to just take shots and create something out of thin air. And that doesn't float with Dwight. Victor Oladipo is very unselfish. Alfred Payton can't score, so he's by default unselfish. So I think in that regard, he could get more shots there as well, which would satisfy him. Mm-hmm. I'm not against it by any means. And if the trade-off is Nick Vucevic, yeah. I mean, I like Vuc, but damn. He's not in his candor-like, but at times he is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the thing you brought up where he would thrive offensively now, I think it's got to be a spread pick and roll system where you've got a good pick and roll ball handler. You've got a couple of guys on the perimeter that can really knock down shots. That's why Portland was my number one for him, because I thought both Dame and CJ could really run the pick and roll well with him. They would need to probably bring in one more shooter in free agency. Boston, they don't necessarily have the shooters, but I mean, a lot of the Howard's defensive metrics from this past season were not great, but like when you're making up for James Harden and Jason Terry and Michael Beasley, that's just going to be the case. So Boston, at least you've got some guys, you know, you've got Avery Bradley, you have Marcus Smart, you have Jay Crowder, you have perimeter wing defenders that will, they won't leave him in such difficult situations. Like a lot of the stuff that I saw where he's credited with giving up a bucket is like someone blows by their wing defender and Howard was like guarding a big kind of out on the perimeter and had to recover quickly and just couldn't get there in time. And it goes against him, but it's really like the guy in front of him, technically his fault that basket got scored. So that's the one. Boston, like, that makes sense to me. Dallas, I just think, you know, assuming everyone comes back, Deron Williams, Chandler Parsons, and Dirk, all three of those guys can shoot. Wes Matthews can shoot. Like, that's an old lineup. I don't know that you're, like, super excited to be building around a bunch of 30-somethings and then Chandler Parsons, but if that's the route you want to go, that team could at least stay relevant for another year or two. But Orlando, so I don't know if it works if you keep Payton and Oladipo in the starting lineup, unless both one of them becomes a more reliable three-point shooter. But if you do Payton, re-sign Evan Fournier, put Mario Hezonja at the three, Gordon at the four, and Howard at the five, and then you have Depo and Vucevic off the bench, like that, now I'm interested. Or maybe, I mean, there is at least speculation that Chandler Parsons might be interested in coming back or coming to Orlando because he played college in Florida. You bring Chandler and Dwight, who played together in Houston. Like, then I need to stop making fun of the Magic.
So I have, like, a hot take here.
Okay.
I think Victor Oladipo is going to be like the, you know how every year there's a guy who's traded that no one really saw coming?
See, Tobias Harris.
Yeah, for example, I think Victor Oladipo is going to be the next one. for several reasons. I think Orlando knows that they're not quite there yet. And he's looking at an extension this fall. And I'm not sure they're willing to invest a significant amount of money in him at this point, especially given that they're kind of in a state of flux.
Yeah, and they tried him as a sixth man, and last year he did not do well on that at all.
No. So I think they're going to, during the draft, actually.
Interesting.
See what they can get.
Ooh, because they're 11th in the draft, I want to say.
I believe that is correct. I'm not entirely sure. Yeah, let me just check.
I believe they're somewhere in the late lottery. I want to say 11th, but would you think...
That is 11th. That's a good memory.
Do you think they would package Oladipo and 11 to move up, or would just flip Oladipo for something else entirely?
I could see them flip Oladipo for a pick in maybe the top 5.
Mm.
If someone is willing to give that up, of course.
Right.
But maybe ship him off for the highest pick you could even get.
I wouldn't hate it if New Orleans just offered 6 for Oladipo straight up.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
I was actually looking at Minnesota at 5.
Mm.
But, you know, if they have a chance... I think it depends, because they like Buddy Hield. That's the word, at least. Personally, I think Jamal Murray makes sense for Minnesota. And if he's gone at 5, which could very well be the scenario, then I think they wouldn't mind Oladipo.
That's interesting. Yeah, I guess we'll just have to see kind of how the board plays out. But they will.
Yeah.
Orlando should definitely have some contingency plans in place based on who goes 3, 4, 5. Because I think you might be onto something, Morton.
I they have Evan Fournier that they want to keep. And then, as you mentioned, Mario Hezonja, right? Like, where do you get the minutes for Oladipo? Yeah.
That's a really good point. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us at the NBA podcast presented by B-Ball Breakdown. Be sure to check out all bballbreakdown.com for playoff coverage. We've had game recaps. We will have a finals preview. And we will start our draft coverage shortly as we need to find out who the Sixers need to take. Until the next time, I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined by Morton Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Thanks as always for joining me, guys.
Likewise, Brian.
Thank you.
All right, take care.